Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Once a month, we talk about home improvement and repair, and I think every one of those programs is really useful for, certainly for me. I hope it is for you as well. Today, we're going to talk about how having an architect involved in your project can help and some creative ways to reuse space and materials for a green and a beautiful home. Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry comes by every couple of months to share information with us. Chad, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
And with you today, we have Andrew Brayman Wadick, who is a licensed architect with Genco House Architects, holds a Master's of Architecture degree from the UW-Milwaukee. Andy's a member of the American Institute of Architects, a docent for the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation Architectural Tours. Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, lots of titles there, and lots of great things that you're doing, Andy.
Well, I have a passion for design, and I stay busy with it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you really are. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have a question for Andy and or Chad, and I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. Chad, maybe start with you. What's the relationship between a contractor and an architect?
Well, it's a great question, Larry. I mean, typically when a homeowner is thinking about a project, it's important to start to think about a concept. And so for us, the way it works is we bring in an architect to be a part of developing the project, someone whose expertise is that, spatial design, and we have them work directly with the client to create a plan, and then, of course, we work on figuring out what it's going to cost to build it or to do it. And so it's a very important part of the process. If you don't have a talented, creative designer, architect involved in the project, then, you're not getting a certain level of creativity that you can otherwise have. And so, we really cherish and advocate for that part of the process.
And which usually comes first? Is it the client working with a contractor or the architect?
Well, sometimes a homeowner will go to an architect first and create a design, have a design developed, and then go out and find a contractor. Typically, we bring the architect in when a homeowner is thinking about the project, and we work as a team to collaborate together because the cost of doing something is tied to what's being proposed. And so if you design something first and then you go to find out what it's going to cost to build it, oftentimes you end up having to revise the design because of concerns about cost or value engineering. And the builder, the contractor, is really the one that often is going to have that expertise on, well, what are the implications of this particular design? So we see it as a collaborative effort. But sometimes people will go first to the architect and figure out what they really want, and then they'll find out what it's going to cost to build it.
And, Chad, I know you do. You're pretty committed to green construction and reducing a building's ecological footprint, I guess we could say. I imagine, important for you that an architect be on the same page as you.
Correct. Well, and of course, when you have an old home, of course, if you're able to repurpose that home to improve it, you are inherently reusing a lot of that structure and those materials, particularly those things which are still have useful life, and then making improvements, utilizing both different types of materials that are going to make the house perform better, allow it to be healthier, improve air quality, those sorts of things. Having an architect that shares those values, understands what is going to be required, that's very important.
And Chad, Andy, it seems like more and more people are looking to be as environmentally friendly as possible with their building and remodeling. I'm thinking back to our remodeling on our home. It mm-hmm. certainly was in our mind. You're a, what is it, a LEED AP for LEED. Homes certified?
That's right. That's right. So LEED stands for Leadership in Environmental Energy and Environmental Design. And that's a program by the United States Green Building Council. And it's a voluntary program, and building owners can choose to be involved in that and have their buildings rated. And somewhat recently, LEED has extended the program to homes. So now your average homeowner can go through that process and have their home rated, either in an extensive remodel or a new construction. So I went through the process to be certified through that because it's an important value of mine.
See, I wondered, what is the value, or why is that a value for you, and then how does it translate into your work with your clients?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, the knowledge base is the value for me, whether my clients choose to participate or not. I feel good about having gone through that process and learned what by the USGBC's regulations, what they require and think of as a green design. So what would be certified as green design? So the way that plays into my projects is first with a conversation. And we talk about the possibilities and see if that is a fit for each client. It's not for everybody, but it always informs the project in some way or another, just having that background.
Yeah, really interesting. Talking today with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and Andy Brayman-Wanick, licensed architect with Ginkgo House Architects. Great to have both of them here today to talk about trends in home design. We're sort of zeroing in a little bit on using recycled and repurposed materials and space. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page as well at the Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Charlotte in Williams Bay, thanks so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, two things. I want to know, is there any way, like, students do internship for, like, I'm like a real estate investor, and I just bought like a fourplex, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to make my rooms work. I want to redesign the kitchen and the plumbing and make sure all of it flows together. So I usually have a plumber, electrician come in. They tell me I can't do this or can't do that. Of course, the architect would be great, but the cost involved, is there another way, you know, that you can help a student that can help you that can be a win-win situation?
Hmm. Yeah, I think there are sometimes those opportunities. You have to be careful with certain projects, and it sounds like maybe with a fourplex like yours, you might need a licensed architect, so somebody who has gone to school, put in their hours, and been licensed by the state of Wisconsin. So other projects that are small projects, I think it's a great opportunity for young students to cut their teeth on projects that are of the right size and right skill level for them. So that's what I would check out. Obviously, people have experience to bring to the table, and that can be very valuable for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good luck, Charlotte. Thanks a lot for calling. And I guess in her case, Williams Bay, she probably goes and takes a look and sees, you know, architects in her area mm-hmm. and contacts those, maybe make some contacts. And
that's right. I think that's where she could start, is to check in with local design firms and to see if they do in fact have interns on staff that that would be willing to that'd be a good fit for her project.
Sounded like she was even interested in interning herself. Another thing that could be proposed to somebody. Charlotte, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Anna in Bayfield, it's your turn. Hi, Anna. Thank you for calling.
Hi. You're welcome. Thank you for answering. I just had a quick comment on the LEED certification. I recently wrote my thesis on the climate change movement in America, and I was writing it from Switzerland, so I was doing a lot of background knowledge on LEEDs, and I found that a lot of architects and environmentalists in America have an issue with the fact that it's so much lower than European standards, and I was wondering if either one of you could comment on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure if I can comment on it, really. I don't really know what European standards are. I do know that oftentimes we look to Europe in terms of energy efficiency and design because they seem to be leading the way in a lot of cases. But I guess I can't compare.
Yeah, the only comment I would make is I know that I have some concerns, and I know some other people have expressed concerns that the way LEED works is it's a point system, and the higher your certification for a building is based on certain points. You know, so you might have a gold building or a platinum building, and particularly with some commercial structures, we're building structures that are basically entirely glazed in glass, mm-hmm. yeah. and they're LEED certified, and so there's something somewhat counterintuitive. I mean, you basically have a shell of a building with maybe at best an R4, mm-hmm. and we're giving that a credential that says it's environmentally sound. I mean, I have some issues with that, so I think there are some flaws with the program maybe and the in a holistic sense, but that I think people are aware of that, and I think it's like anything else, you always have to be a skeptical consumer. So that would be my comment on that.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Yep. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I got an email from Kevin in Chicago. Andy, who do you consider the most important influence as an architect?
Oh, well, I'm often asked that question, and I think there are definitely a lot of amazing architects out there that are quite inspiring. But I happen to grow up just downstream from Taliesin. Mm. So growing up, and that's really what inspired me to become an architect. I was familiar with his buildings in Spring Green and Richland Center, and that's how I ended up where I am today. So I definitely have to say Frank Lloyd Wright being a local hero of ours, particularly with residential design. He had done so many homes and was really groundbreaking in how he, thought of a home, put new ideas out there for us all to consider and responded to the social aspect of a home really well.
You probably have a hard time finding anybody who's going to too many people disagree with you, except leaky roofs are the only thing that always comes up whenever we hear about Frank Lloyd Wright. Why did his roof always leak? Which probably is not the case.
Not anymore, no. No, he was a little ahead of his time maybe for some technologies. But
yeah. John from Madison wanted to know if you use recycled or green materials and how it affects your aesthetics as an architect?
Oh, that's a great question. Because more and more, I think people are expressing the reused and repurposed materials. In fact, in my own home project that I have been working on, that's the approach that I've taken. I've taken the raw nature of these materials that I've reused and repurposed and kind of expressed them. So it's evident that I have this new shell and new walls, but with something that's contrasting against that with, for instance, some old lumber that I used to repurpose as a vanity table. So there's that high contrast, and you can see that has history to it compared to the rest of the house. And it's, I think, a nice effect. It brings a story into a design and a structure.
So that was a big project for you, your own home, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's good to have the experience that my clients have when doing these remodels. So it gave me a great perspective.
And I know from talking, someone was telling me that you've repurposed space in your home in some interesting ways, including removing a second floor bedroom for a pretty creative reason.
Yeah. I eliminated the space essentially to create volume. So the house is a 1920s bungalow, just a half second story, and And I think a lot of people would question, why would you take any floor space away from the structure, in fact, and devote it just to volume? So I removed the floor, and from the first floor, you can now look up into the second floor. Mm. And that creates a very different feel from where this house was. Lots of walls divided it up, and that's just not how we live anymore. Mm-hmm. Most of us. I mean, there's value to those old homes for sure, but this home was in need of quite a few repairs, and it made sense to make some of these bigger moves on it. And now it feels much more open, bright, and airy, yeah. and the spaces flow nicely.
We did that to a lake home that we had several years back, and it really made a big difference in the home. It was, really opened it up and made it feel just wonderful as far as we were concerned.
Yeah, that's why I'm often hired by clients too, right? And we have lots of projects like that to open the space up so people can socialize more, communicate more. Parents can be in the kitchen cooking dinner while kids are nearby doing homework or watching TV.
Yeah. Let's take a call from William in Colfax. William, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I had a question about our house that's built in 1910, and it has blown-in insulation in the attic. But I was wondering, should one insulate in between the roof rafters as well as having it, you know, the insulation blown in? And what about ventilation? It has some vents. Can you have, like, too much ventilation?
Well, those are all good questions. Is it a walk-up attic, or is it just accessible with a hatch?
Yeah, with a hatch.
Okay.
And you have to, you know, it's like a hatch that's been, they used it to blow in the insulation.
Okay.
And the hatch is insulated itself, but it's just, wide enough for my shoulders to fit through, basically.
Okay. Well, so there are a variety of things that we would look at, but one issue is that when you're wanting to make the house tighter and more comfortable, the blown-in insulation unto itself does not necessarily perform very well if air sealing is not done right on the top of the plaster surfaces that are up there in the attic. So often the insulation has to be removed for the air sealing to happen. And, you know, simply adding more insulation won't really do much if air is escaping from the house or from the wall cavities through every place where a pipe or a wire is, making its way through the wall. So that's one issue. Tightening up that shell so that the insulation blanket is able to do its job is an important thing. I do want to mention that in an older home, we have to be worried about asbestos being part of that particulate insulation, if there's vermiculite up there, or there could be other materials that are contaminated. So we have to be careful about that when you're moving it around or trying to remove it. And then it's important that we do ventilate the space that's beyond the shell. So you do, if you are going to leave that as a cold attic up there, it would be important to ventilate it. Another strategy entirely would be to apply a spray-on foam insulation to the underside of the roof deck and make that attic part of the conditioned space. And that would be a different approach, but that would allow you to use that attic for storage and not have to worry as much about what's going on in the floor of the attic.
Okay, could I ask one more question?
Sure.
It's really like... the rooms upstairs are, you know, follow the like on a knee wall, I think it's called, or whatever, a hip roof. Well, on the knee wall, and then it goes up to the. So it's not a very big space. The attic space is actually not very big, so it wouldn't be useful in that way. And the other thing I was wondering about, would it be good to like paint the room with some sort of because there's no like vapor barrier, or some sort of paint that works as a vapor barrier? Is that a product that's available?
There are paints that have a vapor barrier quality that could be used. So that would be a strategy to give a vapor barrier. So that and that is worthwhile to do in an older home with the plaster walls.
Yeah, oh, there we go. Thanks very much for that call. Our guest today, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, Andrew Bramanwanek of Genco House Architects, our guest. They'll be with us till 12:30 here on the Ideas Network. To get what we hope for, a need for home improvement and repair, you know that can be expensive for you, and I know for me, but investing in a skilled architect to help bring your vision to life, that, hey, you know what, that can make a big difference. Larry Mueller here, great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry. Comes by every couple of months. Chad, great to see you.
Thanks, Larry.
And welcoming for the first time, Andrew Bramanwanek. Andy is a licensed architect with Genco House Architects, a Master's of Architecture degree. He's a lead AP for Homes Certified. Andy, thank you for coming by today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. I'm really pleased to have you with us. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. And I want to give Tom in Lansing, Iowa, a chance. Tom, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. This is interesting. I was had a residential Florida contractor's license in Orlando from the 80s on up till we moved back up here later on. And up until Andrew came through in 91, I had a state seal that I could certify drawings for permits. And after Andrew, that all changed. I would try to build things by the book, but I worked for subdivisions that were minimal, and floors would flex brand new and this sort of thing. And once architects and engineers got involved, the structures of these homes improved immensely. And I think that's an important thing. If people want longevity in their home as well as safety, they could consider having proper structures designed. And secondly, if people want to even buy a used home, or looking at just a modular home, they might consider talking to an architect to get an overview of residential space use and see if what might suit their lifestyles better. And thirdly, we lived outside Orlando, and I would go over to Florida Southern in Lakeland and walk around Wright's buildings for hours on end. They're beautiful.
Oh, great comments, Tom. Thank you for calling. And Andy?
Yeah, excellent comments. And to begin with, a good architect will definitely bring a lot of good information about building codes and building quality to the table. And there's a huge value in that. They can also, depending on who your builder is, be your advocate in that process and make sure that all those ideas and that value is being communicated to the builder as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about doing it right and doing it well. And certainly when you've got a team of professionals working together to make sure that nothing is missed, that's of huge value to the consumer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then to the other point, which is the value of bringing in design consulting, even if you're working with a spec home builder or a modular home builder. I have actually had that experience as well, where clients have brought me in to consult on space planning. And I think there's a lot of ways that a design professional can bring value to a project. And I know in this particular instance, it was it was really well received by both the client, the homeowner, and the builder in this case, because they had some special requirements for their family, and with some adjustments that I was able to offer, the project turned out much better for them.
Excellent. Thanks again for calling. Pete in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I was talking Chad and Andrew as well. I was talking to a contractor last night about styrofoam sheeting board, both the typically pink XPS material and the typically white beadboard material. And the contractor didn't think there was any difference between the two. And I even showed the guy, I can breathe through this beadboard.
Right.
But, we know I could build an aquarium or water tank out of the XPS. And in short, the guy didn't get it, that there's proper applications for both the XPS and the EPS. And I was trying to wise him up as to the hazards of a cold side vapor barrier, which a guy could inadvertently make with the XPS. So I'm going to leave it at that and let the experts continue that discussion as far as where does each of these materials, what are the differences of the materials, where they get used properly, what can go wrong, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Sure. Well, it's an excellent observation. I mean, certainly you would hope the people that are, when a professional is installing a material, they have to know what is appropriate to where to use a material. Insulation is, and vapor barriers are tricky details that, you know, when you talk to a building scientist, there's still some heated discussion that goes on about what's the best way to do things. So we're constantly learning from our mistakes, but certainly a contractor should be aware of the significant differences between some of these materials. And typically the pink or the blue board insulation is a very non-porous, allows practically no vapor transmission. It is a vapor barrier, whereas the white bead board really is not a barrier at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to be talking to people who know the materials they're using and can help guide you as a homeowner.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Pete. Appreciate the call. And by the way, you can join in, too. We have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Peter in Chippewa Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hi. The reason I was calling is I have an older brick home. And what I've noticed in the walls between the lath and plaster, there's lath and plaster, a gap, and then there's a tile and then the brick on the outside of that. The gap goes all the way up to the attic, and I'm wondering about, is it possible to insulate that, or do I need to leave that open for breathing, or what do I need to do?
Well, certainly it's something that we'd have to look at to give a definitive answer, but chances are with a masonry home like that, it sounds like you've probably got a tile wall, masonry construction. And if that's the case, you do have to be concerned about the sort of material that you would use, because when the brick gets wet, it's very likely that that wall gets saturated and that moisture is, depending on the conditions, drying to the inside of the house. And so with masonry structures, when we're renovating them, we have to be very careful about what we're using. So I would recommend that you bring in, a building consultant or architect or a knowledgeable contractor to help you diagnose exactly what you've got and to give you some potential ways to improve the thermal envelope.
Mm-hmm. All righty. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Peter, for calling. Eric in Endeavor. Hello, thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. I got two questions. First is, I saw in a home inspection report on the outside steps on the risers, they recommended putting kick plates on there. Like for the riser, I'm curious why that is. It seems like it'd be easier to push snow off of them if you didn't have that. And secondly, what do you deal with the existing ice dam problem mm-hmm. on a roof?
Well, as to the kick plates, I mean, what one of the issues there is that typically in a stair or a deck or porch assembly, you don't want for a child to be able to slip through the structure, and so generally, it's a safety concern that we don't want a 4-inch ball to be able to pass through the structure, either at the railings on the perimeter or through that stairwell. And so that, I think that's primarily the motivation for that particular improvement. Ice dams are generally caused due to heat escaping from a building. And, you know, it warms up the snow and it melts it, and then as that water makes its way down the roof, it refreezes once it gets beyond the spot where the heat's escaping. And so that ice accumulates and it can cause problems. And so air sealing and then improving the thermal envelope are the ways to address that problem. And typically you're going to want to have a knowledgeable insulation contractor or building contractor have a look at that and help you with that.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And a Facebook comment from Todd. He says, I'm going to be building a home in Hayward. It'll have a full concrete block basement, which I'll finish off. Wondering what's the best way to insulate that basement? Should you insulate from the rim joist to just below the frost line or the rim joist to the floor Sprayed foam is kind of out of my price range, so I thought rigid foam board followed by a stud wall, which could receive additional insulation.
Well, so using the rigid foam board certainly can be an appropriate approach. And I would recommend that that be continuous foam board put up and then the stud wall inside of that so that you get the continuous thermal and vapor barrier. I would recommend using a spray foam up in the band joist or the sill joist area. So,
And that can be, if you just use it there, you're not spending a lot of money extra.
Correct. I mean, you will probably need to bring in a professional to apply it, but then there are what are called froth packs that can be purchased. They're generally just sold to contractors, but it seems like it's something that's making its way out into the handyman or the do-it-yourselfer realm. So that is a possibility.
Well, consider the return on investment there as well. If it's not a lot of money, that's one of the key and most crucial areas to insulate. So I think it's good value to put some money into that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had that foam on each floor, where the floors joined, and I think that made a big difference. The insulation we had through the rest was a dense pack insulation, which I think has been very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that the along the ring joist and, you know, where the flooring system meets the outside wall, we have a lot of pipes and wires that go in and out of a house there. And so and it's also where the wood structure sits on the foundation. So by sealing that up with an applied two-part foam, you are sealing so many little nooks and crannies, and that is really why it's worth the extra money. It's going to save you considerably on your energy bill, and you're really going to notice the comfort of the floor above that spray foam. It's going to be a lot toastier in the winter.
Yep. Michael in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm in the process of re-siding my 80-year-old garage in Milwaukee, and I was going to get a vinyl siding. But in order to save a little money, the overhang or the soffit, I was going to just scrape that and paint that. But it's in such bad shape, I'm thinking, I don't know, is there another product that I can use? I see this LP SmartSide makes soffit material. I was just wondering if there's something that could just be tacked up, nailed up there that would cover that would serve better.
Well, you could probably use the smart siding soffit. There are also metal and vinyl materials that could be installed to cover the soffit, and they're fairly cost effective, and you know they're not difficult to install. Many homeowners would be able to do it, and they don't necessarily require any special tools. But I'm a big fan of the smart siding product because you can paint it. It is a wood product, and
it works.
Yeah, it's a good way to go.
I was looking at that their installation instructions on that, and they called for some pretty big gaps around on the edges of that siding, and also as far as nailing it up or whatever, it sounded like something else was almost holding it up. That you had, I don't know if there were like furring strips or something or moldings or something that actually held it in place. I was kind of confused on that.
Okay. Well, yeah, depending on the way the overhang is put together and what's there to attach to, and there are some J-channels and other things that can be used. You do have to be concerned about expansion and contraction with any material, but with the smart siding in particular or any vinyl product, you've always got to leave plenty of room for that expansion. You don't want it busting off the building.
No. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Andy, I want to go back to you for a minute here because we started talking about repurposing materials, and we didn't go into a lot of detail. Talk a bit more about your experiences and with yourself or with clients and repurposing.
Sure. Yeah, I think this is definitely something that we can qualify as a trend, and that I'm hearing more from my clients. Certainly more of a consciousness about what's going into the landfill if it's a remodel situation, are there parts of the project that we can reuse or repurpose in some way? So I'm hearing it come up from them a lot, but I'm seeing it everywhere as well. It's really fun, in fact, just to go onto Pinterest and to websites like that and see the really creative things that people are doing with a lot of times just household objects and sometimes building materials as well. So, of course, really sturdy building materials like old brick and barn board, things like that are being used frequently now to add warmth and again, give a space a little bit of a story and some history. But there's these great resources out there with these fun ideas. Houzz.com is another really good resource, Houzz, gives consumers a lot of inspiration.
Just good ideas.
Yeah.
Things to work from. Yeah, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's actually a lot of fun to think about how you might reuse some of the things you have around your own home,
mm-hmm.
let alone what you might find out on the curb in your neighborhood.
That's
Jim and Wanakee, it's your turn. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it.
Good morning. We're looking into having a house built in the next year or so, and could you address the pluses and the negatives of SIPS panels for the houses?
Sure.
What are SIPS panels?
Well, SIPS panels are essentially a prefabricated wall. It has a foam insulation core and then OSB, or sometimes plywood, but often a OSB, a strand board, a chipboard, inside and outside. And those are essentially pieced together, like building blocks. And so you, you know, there are channels built into them for wiring, and it's a creative way to create basically a very heavily insulated or well-insulated structure. I have to confess, we have not really worked with SIPS panels, so I can't say much or speak to them as something that I've utilized, but we talk about them all the time when we go to conferences, and you know, they're very exciting to talk about. It is certainly something that's easier to use in a new home or a home that's being constructed, because when you remodel, which is what I do all the time,
yeah.
It's harder to make something like that work, because you'd want to design for the typical panel dimension if you were building a new home, and in a remodel, often you don't have that sort of flexibility.
Yeah, makes sense. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Just back to repurposing for a minute. You had some creative uses for knob and tube.
Yeah.
Did you not, Andy?
Right. So in my process with my house, I was intimately involved with the deconstruction. So that gave me an opportunity to inventory kind of the resource that I had, this house. And mm-hmm. Of course, there were a lot of materials that unfortunately there's just no use for, and had to go to the dumpster. But I tried reusing everything I could, and the more I got into it, and the more that I opened up, I just saw more opportunities. So my house, an old 1920s house, was full of knob and tube wiring. So we had gutted the house, and I and the folks helping me demo, we kept pulling these little ceramic knobs and tubes out of all of the joists and started just piling them in a bucket. And I thought, certainly there must be a use for these. They're kind of interesting little gadgets,
yeah.
Right? And people don't really know what they are if they haven't seen them before. So I use them actually just for a coat rack. So I use them as the hook itself. And I think those, again, that's, so people see that and like, what is that? And that it starts a conversation. It's a story. And it is a fun way to honor the house a little bit and reuse something, keep it from going into the landfill.
Yeah, that's wonderful. We have, we're doing some work in our basement, which involved actually digging the basement out. And in the process of digging the basement out, in the ground was the old furnace,
mm-hmm.
The old cast iron, which is all completely broken up. and to be perfectly honest, miserable to get kind of get out. But there's a little metal. There was a metal plate and another piece from the furnace, and save that. And you know, the plate's got part of the name of the company on it. And we're going to do something with that. You know, and it's just a way of
excellent, yeah,
honoring, you know, something that happened.
That's the identity of your house, and I think that's great to keep that around.
Yeah, so we'll be doing something with it. I don't know what, but it'll be displayed at some point in the house, probably down in the area near where it was housed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, well this is a lot of fun. You have a website, do you not?
Yes, it's chadscarpentry.com.
ChadsCarpentry.com, and you've been working Madison area for
21 years.
21? Oh, my goodness. Oh, man, that's a long time.
Yes, it is. But it's a wonderful community to remodel homes in, because there are a lot of great old homes here. And
yeah, that is really true. And we've had a lot of fun with our 1906 our 1905 four-square home, and it's been a lot of fun remodeling. And Andy, do you have a website?
I do, yes. So Ginkgo House Architecture is my website, and it's GINKGO, House Architecture.
And so people can go there and find out
mm-hmm.
everything they need to know about what you do. And how long have you been doing this?
I've been in architecture for over 10 years, and most of that time here in Madison.
Okay, and have done a lot of work with Chad.
I do a lot of work with Chad, yes.
So, perfect.
And I share his sentiment about Madison. It is a great place to practice.
Oh, yeah, wonderful. And, you know, you're an East Sider just like me, so.
We just found that out. That's right.
Me too.
yeah, and Chad. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, Andrew Brayman Wadick of Ginkgo House Architects, our guests. That was really a lot of fun, mate. We'll get him back and do it again.